Hello and welcome to part number 10 of our basic instructional series for policy debate. My name is Alfred C. Snyder. I'm the Edwin W. Lawrence Professor of Forensics here at the University of Vermont. And today I'll be meeting with you about part number 10. We're going to talk about cross-examination. Cross-examination is about 20% of the debate. So it's a very important investment in time. It's a lot of what happens in the debate. And most debaters don't take it seriously enough. Cross-examination is a great opportunity for you to make headway against the opponent's arguments, for you to straighten out confusing things in the debate, and most importantly, to show the judge exactly what kind of the advocate you are. You know, judges try to be objective in making their decisions. They try to decide for the team that did the better debating, the team that has the best arguments. But that isn't the only thing that goes into making their decision. Unconsciously, they decide who looks to them like they are most competent, who is most cooperative, and who seems to be most with it in terms of understanding the debate and the debate process. Cross-examination is a wonderful chance for you to do that. You stand next to your opponent, and the judge can decide who seems to be worthy of winning this debate. The judge often decides who they think's winning the debate and then figures out how that person or that side wins the debate by manipulating the arguments. But cross-examination is your opportunity to make a lot of unconscious headway with the judge, to persuade the judge that you are the person who needs to win the debate. Now, when do you cross-examine? Well, I'm sure you've seen the outline of the debate and which speeches and which cross-examination periods occur when. But to put it very simply, you cross-examine your opponents before your partner speaks. If your partner is about to speak, if your partner speaks next, then you're the one that's going to be doing the cross-examining. And when do you get questioned? You get questioned right after you speak. When you give your speech, you can rest assured that right after it, you'll be cross-examined. Now, as the name implies, there's one person who asks questions and another person who answers questions during the cross-examination period. Usually, the agenda is set by the person asking the questions. The person asking the questions is trying to achieve a number of different things in cross-examination. Here are the things that you should be trying to achieve in cross-examination. First, you need to gain information and understanding about what your opponents are saying. What do they stand for? What are their arguments based on? It's really hard to answer someone's argument unless you understand it. And sometimes their argument is hard to understand. They're not as clear and concise as you are. But in any case, you need to make sure that you understand the other team's arguments. Now, if you don't understand the other team's arguments and the judge doesn't understand the other team's arguments, you're fine. It's not a problem. But if you don't understand the other team's arguments and the judge does, that's a recipe for disaster. You need to make sure that you understand the arguments of your opponents. Get information from them. Ask for justifications and reasons so you'll understand. Second, you can use cross-examination to get your opponents to say things that then you can use against them. If your opponents say something, let's say your opponents admitted cross-examination that voters don't like higher taxes. They don't want to pay higher taxes for schools. You don't need a piece of evidence to prove that argument later in the debate. You can really refer to what your opponent said. Our opponents have already said in cross-examination that people do not want to pay higher taxes for better schools. You don't need a piece of evidence. In some instances, I believe that it's best to think of, well, what's a piece of evidence that I really need in this debate that I don't have? And then you try to get your opponents to say what you need, because then you can use it as a building block for your arguments. So you want to get answers that you can use against them. A lot of times this involves exposing errors, getting them to admit things that may or may not be true about their plan, and also getting them to explain and to indicate what they didn't say. and what they didn't prove, as well as what they did. That's the second thing. The third thing is you want to show the judges, or the audience that you are the smartest person in this debate. You are the coolest person in this debate. And you are the most witted person in this debate. Okay, your partner is really cool and really witted and really smart as well. But cross-examination is a time for you to show that you are cooler, smarter, better than your opponents when you stand right next to them in cross-examination. Make sure that that comparison is clear. Make sure that if the judge asks who seems most cooperative about the issues in this round, they'll say you. If the judge asks who seems to be the most enjoyable to listen to, the judge will say you. Who seems to be the nicest person and not a jerk? The judge should say it's you. And a lot of that will be based on your behavior during cross-examinations. Don't be afraid to be dynamic. Have questions ready. One of the things that you can do is, as you take a flow of the debate and write down the arguments, have a little CX symbol, like a CX in a circle, and put that next to anything you want to ask cross-ex questions about. Then, when you stand up, you automatically have a number of things that you want to ask questions about, and so you're prepared. Show the judge you act with confidence, you know what you're asking about. As I say, this is the one opportunity you'll have to stand side by side with your opponent. Make sure you look good. Well, the major activity is carried out by the questioner, because the questioner initiates the questions, asks the questions, and tries to accomplish a number of things. Let's talk about some of the things that the questioner should keep in mind. First, you should try to ask a short question. And you should try to ask a short question that elicits a short answer. Don't ask a question that rambles on and on and on. The person answering it will be confused, the judge will be confused, you'll be confused. Ask a short, directed question. Ask a short, directed question designed to get a short answer. Be specific about what you're looking for. Second, always indicate the object of your question. What issue is it that you're talking about? Start your question by saying something like, "Now, your first disadvantage about federalism." That way, we all know what you're talking about, we know what the object of the question is, and we can relate the question and the answer to it. Or you can say, "Now go to the third contention where you claim the plan will solve the problem. Now, where has this approach ever been used before?" So we know what you're asking about. Always indicate the object of your question. Third, don't telegraph your argument. Don't telegraph your argument. You know, a lot of successful or very talented boxers can't be world champion because they telegraph their punch. There's a specific thing that they do before they deliver the punch. So their opponents have studied the films and they know that that punch is coming, so they can duck it in advance. Also, in Major League Baseball, people who steal bases will study videotapes of pitchers so they know when the pitcher is going to throw over to first base. So that when they know the pitcher is going to do that, then they can dive back to first base and they can get a bigger lead. What do I mean by this? Don't telegraph your argument. Don't say something like, "Now it appears to us that your plan will be too expensive. Isn't it true that X, Y, and Z will cost many billions of dollars?" Don't let them know what argument you're trying to establish necessarily, or they'll begin their answer by trying to destroy your argument. Don't ask them a question that they won't answer properly. Don't ask them a question that they won't answer properly. You can't ask questions like, "Now, we've clearly shown that your plan won't work, right?" No affirmative is going to answer that. "Yes, our plan fails." That's not going to happen, right? Don't ask them questions like, "If I can prove that Bill Clinton was the president through most of the 1990s, then I'll win the debate, right?" Of course not. They're not going to admit that. Don't ask them questions where the answers are something that you don't want, or the answers are going to be really obvious and not what you're seeking. The person who you're questioning is never going to admit that you are winning the debate. Your job is not to convince. the person answering the questions that you're winning the debate. Your job is to try to convince the judge that your questions can be used in your arguments to win the debate. Number five, make your questions seem important, even if it's just an attempt to clarify. Now, I'll give you an example. Let's say that they have six answers to one of your disadvantages, and you didn't get answer number four. Now, don't ask your question by saying, I didn't really get answer number four. Can you tell me what it is? Because that makes it look stupid. Make your question sound important. Can you please explain the logical concept behind your fourth answer to the disadvantage? Right? Then it makes it look like you are probing the argument. Don't make yourself look stupid by the questions you asked. How many contentions did you have? Three or four? Right? That makes you look really stupid. Instead, you can say, please reiterate for me your major contentions. Six, be polite. Be polite. Politeness is a must. It's very important for you to be polite. It's very important for you to be polite, especially if whoever you're questioning or other people in the debate are not. Politeness is a must. Remember, cross-examination is a chance to compare. And the judge can compare your attitude and your politeness and your respect for other people with that of your opponent. If your opponent is rude and disrespectful, then you need to be extra careful about being nice. Say please, say thank you, say all the things that your mother taught you to say, and you'll be much better off. Don't be snide. Don't be a smart aleck. Appear confident and ready to answer questions because you don't perceive yourself as being threatened by the other team. Seven, approach things from a non-obvious angle. Approach things from a non-obvious angle. And then use whatever it is that you answer you get to try to trap them. I'll just give you a couple of examples. Now we know that in inherency, the affirmative attempts to establish why the affirmative plan is not in existence now. So if let's say that you want to establish an argument and your argument says that people will be unhappy if the affirmative plan is adopted. Well, you can say, you can ask questions like this. Please turn to your inherency contention. Now here you outline that Congress doesn't like the affirmative plan. Is that correct? You outline here that teachers do not like the affirmative plan. Is that correct? And that this is your inherency position. Very good. It looks like you're just asking about inherency, when in actuality, what you're trying to do is establish that people will be upset by the affirmative plan, and that will lead to some kind of disadvantage or some kind of solvency problem. I'll give you another example. Let's say you want to argue that the affirmative plan will be incredibly expensive. The affirmative plan will be incredibly expensive. Well, you don't ask them questions like, isn't it true that your plan will be really expensive? You know, of course they're going to say no. Instead, you should ask questions about solvency that go sort of like this. Well, will there be enough classrooms for this particular class offering to be given in? What if teachers don't have enough special training for these classes? Will you just put them in anyway? And they'll say, no, we're going to train these teachers in. What about special instructional materials? Will special instructional materials be provided, or will you just ignore that? No, we'll provide them. What about small schools in isolated areas? Are you just going to ignore them? No, 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 we're going to do that too. Now, what seems to be emerging here is that there are going to be a lot of extra expenses and costs associated with the affirmative plan, associated with doing what they want. So they're answering questions about all the wonderful things they're going to do to make their plan work, when in reality, they're setting up for you an argument that says the plan is going to be extremely expensive. Eight, mark your flow sheet as you go along. As you flow their arguments, mark your flow sheet with little CX symbols, little notes about what you want to question them about. Then when you stand up, you have lots of notes on your flow sheet about questions you want to ask. Number nine, Avoid open-ended questions. Avoid open-ended questions. Now, when you ask an open-ended question, it gives the answerer an opportunity just to give a speech. You don't want them to use your cross-ex time to give a speech. So avoid asking questions like, can you explain to me how your plan leads to more academic achievement? You know, I bet they have an answer to that. I bet they would like to give a little speech about that. But you don't want to have an open-ended question like that. Instead, you might ask a more narrow question like, where has it been proven that adopting a measure like your plan increases academic achievement? Or how much will academic achievement increase if your plan is adopted? So don't ask open-ended questions, because it will give them an opportunity to give a little speech. 10, look at the judge, not your opponent. Look at the judge. Your opponent was never going to be convinced that you're winning the debate. They'll never agree to it, even if they are convinced. You're not going to get them to vote for you. They don't even have a ballot. The judge is the one who will vote for you. Face the judge, look at the judge, and then you'll be able to judge, to gauge any of the reactions that the judge may have. The judge may like a line of questioning. The judge may not like their answer. The judge may not, might not like a particular line of questioning. Look at the judge, not your opponent. 11, you don't score points in cross-ex alone. You have to use cross-ex in your speech. You can't assume that you expose errors in the affirmative case and then the judge automatically credits you for it. If you expose errors in the affirmative case in cross-ex, you have to make an argument in your speech that establishes that, that uses the cross-ex answer. Don't let cross-ex stand alone. Integrate the good cross-ex material you got into your speech. 12, focus on areas where they're weak. If you can sense where the other team's arguments are weak, that's where you want to ask questions, not when they're where they're strong. 13, no personal attacks. None, never, no way, no how. There are certain words that you should never use in debate. And I'm going to mention some of them. There are lots of words, but there are some you might be tempted to, like stupid, ignorant. Those are very important words that you should never use. Don't make a personal attack on the other team. Their arguments may be illogical or invalid or irrelevant, but they're not stupid or ignorant. Avoid personal attacks. 14, don't repeat their answers. A lot of times, novices are tempted to, you ask a question, they answer it, and then you repeat their answer. Now, generally, you don't want to do that. It's a big waste of time. Unless you really want the judge to remember, oh, so your answer is the plan will cost $14 billion. Now, if that's an important number and you want the judge to remember that, repeat it. Otherwise, don't bother. 15. Always use all of your cross-examination time. Always use all of your cross-examination time. The reason you should is because while you're asking questions, your partner is preparing. Your partner needs his or her prep time. Make sure that they get it by using all your cross-ex time. Okay, with that in mind, let's talk about some guidelines for answering questions. Well, the first one's kind of the mirror image of the first one we had before. Give a short answer. A lot of times when you ramble on and on in your answer, all you end up doing is getting yourself in trouble. Just give a short, basic, clear answer and move on. Especially in beginning debate, you'll find that if you give short answers, they will run out of questions and it'll make them look bad. It also makes you look like you're in control. You don't have a long, evasive answer. You have good answers like, no, only in poor jurisdictions. 14%, 1 year. Answers like that will help you a lot. Second, whenever possible, refer to something you've already said or a piece of evidence that's already been used in the debate to answer your questions. Refer to something that's already been said. For example, if you know your first affirmative speech, really well. Try to answer as many questions as you can with reference to that speech. Well, the Johnson evidence in contention 3 answers that when she says blah blah blah, right? This way you look very authoritative, you look like you're in control, and it won't get you into trouble. Because if you've already said it, you're already in trouble. Usually you get in trouble in cross-ex when you start rambling on, saying things you shouldn't say and don't need to say. Try to refer to something you've already said whenever possible. 3, answer questions based on what's happened in the debate so far. Answer questions based on what's happened in the debate so far. Don't answer questions like, well, if we make this argument, what will your partner's argument be? Or, will your partner run any new advantages in second affirmative constructive? Don't predict the future about what's going to happen in this debate. 4, don't make promises of what you'll do later. Sometimes they'll ask you a question and you're not really sure what the answer is. And they'll say, well, can you give us this information later? Don't say things like, my partner will read a piece of evidence explaining this in her constructive. We will later in the debate provide you with this statistical information. Don't do that. You don't want to make promises as to what you're going to do in your speech, especially your partner's speech. They don't like that. If they need information, tell them you'll give it to them, but not necessarily during the speech. 5, qualify your answers. Qualify your answers. And what I mean by qualifying them mean sometimes, always, never, often, rarely, things like that. And you know, frankly, often, rarely, sometimes, and maybe are a lot better answers than always or never. 6, be willing to exchange documents read into the debate. If you have a brief that you have read, a piece of evidence that you have read, don't be afraid to show it to your opponents and to let them have it, but make sure to get it back. 7, answer only relevant questions. Answer only relevant questions. If they want to ask you things like, hey, what are you doing after the tournament? Where'd you get that pretty sweater? Just say, I'm here to answer questions relevant to this debate, and I would appreciate it if you'd ask me some. 8, address the judge. Always talk to the judge when you answer your questions, because you want to see if the judge likes your answers or not. 9, try and avoid answering hypothetical questions. Hypothetical questions. A hypothetical question is like, what if? Well, what if the economy went into a depression? Now, if that happened, do you think that? Don't make predictions about that. Don't answer hypotheticals. You could say, well, if you prove that the economy is going into a depression, then we'll be glad to answer this. But you have to prove that first. Don't answer a hypothetical question. If your opponents demand that you answer a hypothetical question, tell them you'll be glad to in the form of a hypothetical answer that you're not going to be held to. 10. Don't say, I don't know. Don't say, I don't know. You can say, I'm not sure at this time, or I'll have to find out. But, you know, if you say, I don't know, then that means the official position of your team is, I don't know. And I don't think that's what you want. 11, don't be evasive. Try to be direct. Don't look evasive either. Look as if you're trying to directly answer their questions. You're trying to be clear and cooperative, and the judge will like that. 12, don't ask questions. Don't ask questions. If you are the answerer, don't respond to a question with a question. Okay? You are the answerer. Keep your roles straight. 13, watch out for traps. Watch out for traps. They will be asking you questions, as we indicated, to try to set you up to make a mistake, to say something that they can use against you. Before you answer a question, you need to quickly think, how could this answer get me in trouble? How could this answer get me in trouble? And if you're thinking about it in advance, a lot of times you'll avoid trouble. Well, those are the kinds of things that you should keep in mind when answering questions. I want to talk about a couple of other things. And the first thing I want to talk about is what we call open cross-examination. Now, generally what happens is one person asks the question and one person answers the question. Now, in some situations, in some leagues, in some debate cultures, it becomes kind of an open discussion. You ask a question of the speaker, and their partner answers it, and then your partner asks a question, and the partner not speaking is, and it becomes like a four-way discussion. I think that it's okay to do that as long as it's all right with the judge, as long as it's part of your normal debate culture, and as long as everyone agrees. Here's my advice. My advice is for you not to do that. The reason that people have open cross-examination in many instances is that the partner doesn't trust the person being questioned to answer the question correctly, or they don't know. It's often assumed that when the partner goes to give the answer for you, that it's because you don't know. And I don't think you want to show that. I think you want to show that each of you is perfectly in control. So always try to answer your own questions. Let your partner answer their own questions. Let your partner ask their own questions. Show confidence in your partner. Now, in some instances, there's a situation where you're really not sure what the answer could be or should be, in which case you may look to your partner for assistance. But I think you can have a simple signal code that you can use. One, you know, if you think the answer is yes, then, you know, you can go like this, you know, like they do in baseball. You can have a signal code, right? Means not sure at this time, you know? And this can mean yes, and this can mean no, and you'll be all set. And you can signal each other, no one will notice. So watch out for open cross-examination. Final thing I want to say is just something about the affirmative. The first negative will present a bunch of arguments, a lot of off-case arguments you may not understand. Questioning the first negative speaker is very important to find out what those are. You want to find out, for example, about negative topicality arguments. How many, which words, what violations do you think we have? Very important. And then for the disadvantages, you need to find out what's the thesis behind this disadvantage, what's the general idea, and what's the link? Why does our plan cause it? Those are some critical things that you can use when you're affirmative and you're cross-examining the negative. Well, there we are. Cross-examination, 20% of the debate. People don't use it. How can you give yourself an extra edge on your opponents? By using cross-ex effectively, both to build your arguments, to construct your issues, and to let the judge know who is the better debater. And by good performance in cross-examination, you can get the judge thinking in the right direction that you're the better debater and should win the debate. Thanks a lot for listening to this little talk about cross-ex, and I'll see you later on in our series, Keep Debating, Don't Give Up.